He finds the good in the quarterback.
Well, let's see what the good in Dylan Gabriel is with Coach Lance Reisland. Coach Riz, Cleveland.com. Hey, Coach, how you doing?
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Well, we were just having the conversation here about Dylan Gabriel as the backup. If he had to early in the season, do you think Dylan Gabriel is ready to start a game?
Well, I think he's a quarterback that you can win with right now. I do. I don't think he's a quarterback you can win because of. And I think with the Browns, that's what I mean by that is that when he was struggling really bad in camp, it was accuracy. But all the stuff that can allow you to win with a quarterback, his ability to set protections, his ability to get in and out of the huddle, to call plays, that's all been really, really solid with him. However, the accuracy was off, and it was off for about 3 to 4 days, maybe even 5 days. Now, he's been real accurate, you know, except those two turnovers, one turnover, actually. But he's been doing those things at a high level. He just hasn't been accurate. So, again, I don't think he's a guy you can rely on, but I think he's a guy who can get you into the right run game. I think he's a guy that can make some throws if needed. Obviously, punt the ball on third down, all the things I say all the time. But I do think he's a guy who can start and a guy you can win with right now.
So that does have me a little alarmed, only because, like, if it was San Francisco, for instance, and you had all these weapons a couple years ago, and you're talking about Shanahan being able to get the most out of Brock Purdy, it's like, all right, that's fine. You throw him out there. You got all these pieces that you can play with. It'll work out. But I look at Dylan Gabriel, and then I look at this Browns roster. This is I think you'd have a hard time with top five quarterbacks in the leagues winning with this wide receiver core, with this running back situation. Nonetheless, guys that you need a lot of weapons around in order to have success with, Coach.
Well, I think that's fair. My thought would be on this. It would be, first of all, you're going to play great defense, and you saw if they can punt the ball well, which Bjorkas has done very well, you can see those how hard it is to go 90 yards against the Browns. Obviously, when I say win with, I think that's with the idea that you're going to create a couple turnovers. I don't think he's a guy who can go out there and do it on his own. I think him and Shador have taken great strides, and I think they're doing a great job of scaffolding and getting them where they need to be. But I think you got to rely on that defense, and I do think that front seven is a front seven that can be top five. Now, if you're going to be top five, you got to create turnovers. You got to create short fields. You got to score some points defensively. You have to punt the ball very well. You got to make sure you make your extra points. You got to do all those little things very, very well. And you're right. Now, the other thing is, I think they're going to shorten the game with the run game. And I think the offensive line is going to be much better regardless of who the back is, because I think the offensive line is going to be better because they're blocking double teams and they're blocking wide zone and they're blocking gap and they're doing things that they're good at. And I think they'll be much improved. Obviously, they're going to have some help with that defense, whoever the quarterback it is.
Coach, looking to the 53-man roster, we've gotten into the nits and grits of this. It came out about the 3 o'clock hour. We know it's the initial 53-man roster, but what decisions did you like the most off what we saw from the 53-man roster?
Well, I thought, you know, it kind of gives me, when a guy like Larvadam makes a team, it tells you that preseason is important. It tells you that going out every day and practicing is really, really important. But then you have some other things that were kind of questioned, you know, for me, receiver-wise, that were question marks. But that's a good thing, right? The kicker went out and earned it. The Larvadam went out and earned it. So I think that would be the thing I'm most looking forward to as they get, you know, closer to game time here is who's going to be the guy that touches the ball? Who's going to be the guy who does gets the ball in space? That would be my initial thought.
All right, so what happens with the running backs? You got Jerome Ford, Dylan Sampson. Stefanski today said you're going to add another. Are you going to an Audric Estime? Are you going to someone we've seen a lot of already with in a Browns uniform? What are you looking at for another running back?
Well, I think you got to go with somebody who runs the zone very well and somebody who, you know, obviously can run both, but that wide zone is what Kevin's really focused on, right? That big double teams. Somebody who can get downhill. You guys have heard me say it before, second and six. So maybe a guy who can, maybe not a game breaker. You have that in Sampson and Ford. Maybe a guy like an Estime in this scheme and what they have makes a lot of sense to me because he gets you to second and six or could because he's a big, heavy body. Now, I don't know if he can or not. I haven't watched a ton of him since he came out of Notre Dame. But he's a guy, body type, and what he does well makes sense to me because he can get them ahead of the sticks, which I think is so crucial for the Browns offense this year.
Lance Reisland on the fan hotline here. One of the interesting bits of news is, Ethan Posick being hurt over the weekend against the Rams. Now, of course, Ethan is on the 53-man roster, but this could put Luke Whipler into a chance to play early. I know I haven't seen a lot of Luke because of injuries of this camp, of this preseason. What have you seen of the young man? Are you confident they've got the right guy to step in if they need to with Ethan Posick injured?
Well, when Whipler plays low, when he plays with the leverage, he's very, very good. He has a great first step. He blocks back very well on counters and gaps, powers and things like that. But what he does really well in that wide scheme, he gets to the next level very well. So having those really good guards next to him will allow him to kind of leave those doubles early, in my opinion, especially against the Bengals, where he's going to see a four front. So he won't be covered if he has to play against the Bengals, which I think is a huge now they might cover him because it's him, but their base defense is four down. So they're not going to cover him, which allows him to get to the second level, which he does very well on zone. He does very well on screens. He does a nice job of moving laterally within there. He gets in trouble sometimes because he's a little bit undersized when they cover him and just try to blow him back in the backfield, which can kind of mess up those pulling guards at times. But yeah, for the front they're going to see, and you know what they're going to do offensively, he can be very successful in there.
Coach, is this the worst wide receiver room in the NFL?
Well, it's a work in progress. How's that sound? So you know, I tend
That's
not to
yes.
lose. I always
that sounds like a yes. Yeah.
I tend to do the, as my dad always said, I tend not to lose the game before I play it. So I'm going to let those guys go play. A guy like Sed Tillman is frustrating me because physically he's gifted. Now, a guy like Isaiah Bond, I like production over, traits, right? So Caden Davis, I would have kept. I think he's been outstanding. He's been open versus everybody all camp. So, I really liked him. I thought he had a great camp. Him and Larvidan had great camps. It tells me, you know, obviously I think they're going to be most successful in 12 personnel with Fannin on the field. You saw Fannin on the touchdown. He was out at one at receiver. He's too big for a corner. So it tells me 12 personnel is going to be the foundation, but they still had to find that number two guy. And Tillman showed some before the concussions, he was having some success, but he's not a true number two yet. So obviously with play action, the things they're doing offensively, you don't have to have three or four guys that are outstanding. You got to have Judy because he's got to be the guy over the top, but they got to find some guys besides Fannin, and hopefully Tillman can do it. That would be my thought. It's definitely a work in progress, and definitely those guys are going to have to play above their head from what they've done so far.
The Browns announcing today they were keeping 10 defensive backs, and I know there's been some talk that there's overlap between some of the safety work in the Jim Schwartz defense and the linebackers, but 10 defensive backs in a room that people think maybe they could use another corner. What's a key to this secondary being able to maybe be better than we're expecting as opposed to just being bailed out by a really great front four?
Well, that's where it starts, Dick. I really do think it starts with, for all of the secondaries, but it really starts with that front four creating pressure. Now, if the Browns struggle coverage-wise, they can rush just four because they have four talented guys that are, you know, six, seven, eight deep. So if you can just rush with four, it's a numbers game. Then you can drop seven, which obviously makes sense. So I think that's the key. Now, the keeping 10, I don't think of them as DBs as a whole in the Schwartz defense. You have the first level, then you have that second level, and those are the obviously the guys, the Delpit guys, the, Edmonds before they cut them, guys who have long, huge, long bodies can play well down in the box. They have a bunch of different guys. Hickman's been down there a bunch. Newsom's been in there a bunch. That nickelback has run responsibilities and C and D gaps. So that second level guy, doesn't necessarily mean they're all going to be defensive backs or all linebackers or second level guys, but the secondary is going to have to make sure they keep things in front. So maybe you don't see, unless it's Ward, maybe not as much press man. You can play some man, but you can play some off man. Make them throw the ball underneath. Make teams go 10 plays. And then you got to really rely on that pressure. If you're struggling cover, the only thing you can do is apply more pressure. So if they're struggling with four, then they got to bring five and possibly six at times.
Coach, how does someone like Aiden Huntington, how does he fall through the cracks?
Well, he's 280, right? So he's when you watch him, I posted a couple things today on him. So he's 280 pounds. He's out of Tulane, and he was in a scheme that wasn't like Schwartz's. So he's a scheme fit. He's, you know, he's 6'1", 280, but he has a tremendous motor, and he plays with tremendous leverage. But if he had a two-gap in there, he would really struggle at that weight, right? So obviously, I don't know what he's weighing right now, but he is undersized. He's not as tall as he needs. But if you watch him, he has great get-off. He has violent hands. He's really good in the short area. And in that A and B gap for what they need him for, he's going to be a specialist on long yardage situations. And he's a guy who can rotate in there, and he plays with great energy. And he's another guy that could bump out to the end, and you can move Wright and Miles and those guys down inside if you like a matchup, which they have great matchups against Cincinnati on those guards. So those defensive tackles, their ability to go outside – makes a big deal. And that's why he slipped through the cracks, just because he's not a physically imposing guy in terms of his heaviness or his weight.
All right, the win total has stayed consistent at 5.5 games. You taking the over or the under?
Oh, I'm over. I was over before. I'm over. And I'm going because of the offense and especially the defensive lines. If you're good in the trenches, you got a chance. So I'm going to go over.
How far
over? Yeah, how far over?
I'm going 9-8. I'm going 9 wins.
9-8?
That was 9 wins?
I'm going 9 wins.
Okay.
I'm sticking this year, coach. Yes, I am.
Where are we getting these wins from?
Well, here's what I'm saying is that I will say this. I'll caveat is that maybe they don't get denied because they lose late, but that offensive line and that defensive line, and if they can create some turnovers, they will be in games late. And when you're in games late, you roll the dice sometimes, right? Sometimes you hit some plays, things like that. You have a veteran quarterback. So if that defense can keep them in the game, if they can pump the ball well, I'm doing a lot of coach cliches here at you, but they can make that work. And I mean that because if you're good in the trenches, which they are, you have a chance to win every game you play.
Coach,
doesn't mean you are.
You know who you're talking to, right? You're talking to three-win Wilson over here.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Once again, I want to make sure that I'm not jumping in the norms. I want to make sure that I give you my honest. I think they're going to be much better than people think because of those fronts. I really do. I just think they're going to be I think they're going to control the ball a little bit on offense. They're going to play great defense. I think that defensive line is going to cause some turnovers. I think Bjork is a top five punter. I think they have the makeup to sneak some wins where they're not supposed to.
All right. I'll make a deal then.
he wants a deal so bad.
If the Browns win six,
I'll deal you.
If the Browns win six games or less, you buy me a burger.
Oh, you could have got him at like seven, it feels like.
No, I'm going to be fair here. Or seven wins or more, I buy you a burger.
I'm in for that. Absolutely.
Just so you know, I am undefeated at burger bets. Your ass is grass. I'm going to be enjoying that burger, coach.
That's because he tilts the book in his favor, and rightfully so.
How so? He said nine this wins. I gave him seven wins on.
It's very
fair. Yeah, you gave me a little leeway there. I'll take it.
He's more fair to you than he was Fanta. Let's be honest about that.
Fanta talked a big game and then said six wins. Come on, what are we doing?
So we have a burger bet confirmed between you two? Is that what happened?
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. Burger bet.
All right, and, huzzah on three. 1, 2, 3, huzzah. Okay.
Huzzah.
You make me look like a D there.
I didn't know where you were going with that. Huzzah.
I said huzzah on three.
You're a coach. You've been doing on threes your whole life.
I thought this was your language. I was trying to meet you in the streets, coach.
Your level.
I've been out of the game for a little bit. I gotta get back in a little bit with the on threes. All right, I'm my bad. All right, I got you.
No
all right, coach, count of three. Favorite Matt Damon movie, go. 1, 2, 3.
Good Will Hunting.
See, at least he played the game.
Yeah. I did not. Fanta I was over it.
Fanta wouldn't.
Yeah, turnabout's a fair play there, coach. All right, buddy.
Yeah, I did. I understand the D-bag kind of conversation there. That's what it felt like on the island. I got you. It's all right. It's okay.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to my burger, coach. Great stuff, buddy.
Oh, yeah. We going. Where are we going? Are we making each other the burger or are we buying it?
We don't want to offend Spencer German and make burgers and not invite him.
That'd be really funny.
Might have to be a takeout situation.
That'd be funny if I had coach make me a burger. I just didn't let Spencer there. That's not great. Coach, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
Thanks, coach.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. We'll talk soon.
We'll hammer out the details of the burger bet. Now
you got somebody to bite.
And I think what was fair is I didn't try and get teasers and a milkshake out of it.
Yeah.
I just said a burger.
There you go.
Give me a quality burger and some sides. Lance Reisland on the Fan Hotline. He joins us every single Tuesday at 6 p.m. We'll react to what he had to say in the... We got to get to whether Ohio State ordered the code red or not in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
In between innings, Tanner Bibee visibly upset, frustrated. Stephen Vogt.
Yeah, well, he was right behind him all the way.
That was not a pleasant conversation.
No, but you know what? That's what's been going on with Tanner Bibee. He came in and then said that, and the manager says, no, no, no. He put that to an end quickly.
So I think this does mean a lot of things, and I think there's a lot of interpretations that have come out of this, and of course that audio courtesy of Guardians TV.
Mm-hmm.
On the nose, I didn't immediately hate it. from Bibee, who I think has been frustrated all season long and needs to get his emotions out, but certainly from Vogt, who most of the time anyone can commit highway robbery in that clubhouse, and it doesn't seem like they get called out for it.
Well, they don't get called out through the media at all in the slightest bit, and so we don't know if he's calling out people behind closed doors, but like I want to know what he said. That's why, first off, I want to know if Bibee angry at himself or was Bibee angry at the offense?
I think I'm going to go ahead and say, by the way he reacted, he was angry at the offense.
So I agree with that. That changes my perception of things. It's not as if Bibee's been so great, and he wasn't great in that moment, that he would get some sort of Peter went past, so to speak, in this scenario. Like you can't blame it. Listen, the offense has been dreadful. They haven't scored in three plus games now. Not great, but you don't get to call out the offense when you've not been nearly as good as you're supposed to be, Tanner Bibee.
Unless you've been feeling the pressure of how bad the offense is, and that's part of your downfall. And this is where I'm going to give a little bit of empathy to the kid. I think the kid is incredibly competitive. I'm a little worried there's a little Trevor Bauer there with the temperamental
I've
stuff.
Heard other people say that too, and they made the suggestion. It's like, oh, reminds me of another guy that the initials of TB. And what I thought about with that was I thought about when Bauer threw the ball 300 feet from the mound in Kansas City, and then like you saw Tito, Tito's reaction.
Knew exactly what Tito said to him too.
But it felt very similar to Vogt's reaction last night in many, many ways, where it's like you can make of it what you want, but it just, they both had that same demeanor. And so I'm like, what did Tanner Bibee say?
And
how much of a noob? Noob is the wrong term. How much of a? I was gonna say a boob. How much of a boob is he really? Is he always doing this?
I mean, I think he has self-destructed a lot this year. But I can I want to try and be a human about this, because if you're going out there and you're feeling the pressure of being an ace, and you can't get any damn hits. I mean, I think that's a very human response, even if it's not the right response.
No, but I think he's smart enough to understand that nobody in baseball cares right now if he's not winning games in the win-loss column. Like, I get he wants to win games from just a personal standpoint. Paul Skeens has a ERA under 2 and has, 3, 4, 5 wins, whatever it is. Like, he had a stretch of 2 months where he didn't win a single game that he started with the Pirates playing, and it's like shouldn't really dictate him or matter to him one way or another.
Yeah, but I think if you're not pitching well and you're not getting run support, I can understand how that crashes down on you. I can understand if that leads to a blow up. I really can. I'm not saying it's right. I really am not trying to defend him, but I am trying to understand it a little bit, because I think one of the things we've liked about Tanner previously is that he's a bit of a bulldog. Well, that doesn't always come out positively.
Also, the point is that I would much rather prefer that was him getting angry at himself, that was him getting angry in the moment, that he wasn't able to locate some pitches, that he's now allowed 24 home runs in the season, which is just an astronomically high number of home runs to have allowed. I'd be more accepting of that than if he came back in the dugout and was trying to light up. By the way, you saw J-Ram's reaction in this? I mean, J-Ram looked like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah, I mean,
between him and Bo Naylor, they looked like, what are you doing right now?
Did you see Carl Willis?
No.
Carl Willis did not look up once. He was like, I think he had like a pitch card in front of him, and he just had his head down. Mind you, the manager and your previous ace are screaming at each other in the dugout. Willis does not flinch. He does not look anywhere else other than the card.
Man, I've been there in fights, though. I've watched fights in this radio station where I'm putting my head down.
I was just like, Carl, no one's buying it. Everyone knows that you know this is going down.
No, but you can't smile during it. That's what I've learned, too, is I've been caught in moments.
You can't smile.
I've been caught in moments where people are getting after it, and then you give a little smirk, and then all of a sudden, you're the one in trouble.
Oh, no. See, because then if somebody yells at me, then I just yell back.
Yeah.
I've learned that. If somebody really, okay, if you don't deserve it and somebody yells at you, the most effective thing, it's like scaring a bear. Just yell back at it. Right?
You're supposed to get tall with a bear, right?
Yes, you are.
Hands up.
I do the same thing with Keith.
That's right.
If I feel like I've been wronged, I just really buck up, and the Bucyrus in him comes out. He's like, okay, all right, we got a little too hot there. Let's chill out.
Can I get you some coffee, Mr. Britton?
Sounds like me doing that read at 5:20.
All right. That's good. As of today, I think this is a little deal. But I think tonight will inform whether it's a big deal or not. If this team comes out and plays as poorly as they did last night, to me it's going to be a sign that they're giving in. When you have a moment like this, when you have a huge outburst between the manager and one of your best pitchers and a guy you've got under contract long term, how you react to it says everything. Because that moment last night can be the moment where they blew off some steam, and you know what? It turns out we actually needed that, even though it didn't come about the right way.
Kind of like a manager going out and getting tossed intentionally.
Yeah, absolutely. But
something
but,
to shake it up a little bit.
But in a way of, hey, we all want to win so bad, we're fighting each other, let's let some of that steam off. That's only if you come out and just pummel the Rays tonight. If you get one hit tonight, I think it ended the season.
Well,
I'm not trying to be too hyperbolic because they were already getting their ass tossed.
I was going
to
say, losing 9 out of 10 and now what are we at, 5 or 6 in a row? That lost the season.
But like, I just continue to come back here. I'm like, come on, let's I love moments like this. I do. Like, as a fan, I love moments like this because it's like, all right, how do we respond? Right? Like, all right, that was not a good moment. It was not in the moment a productive moment. But like, this team decides whether that's a defining moment in a good way or a bad way, whether it just shoveled some more dirt on the coffin of the 2025 season, or do they actually show up and have some fight today? Because they've not had any fight, I mean, at all in the last 13 games.
Did you like that Vogt followed him into the dugout and kind of chased him around like he was trying to like rope in a puppy?
Yes. Yeah, I understand that, and I think this is one of the reasons why Tito was so great at being Tito, is most of the time there's a specific atmosphere that you keep. And so they always say this about coaches. He's the same guy every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes you have to lose your temper, though. Sometimes it's right to voice your frustration or to have a go at somebody if you're not seeing eye to eye. And if things have been bubbling for a while, if this is one of many outbursts, yeah, do I think players are going to look at that and go, oh, yeah, this is a job. This is...
yeah.
We got to bind our P's and Q's.
I mean, you just can't ignore it. And again, it does matter what he was talking about. I wish we knew specifically what he was talking about. But if he's going after the offense in that sort of way, you can't let him dog other players in that moment. When he's not doing his own job.
No, I know, but I just, I really, I this year, and I felt way.
If that's Pedro Martinez in 01, for instance, where just no one touched him at all and he was dominating, he comes back to the dugout and has a few words for the offense. I think that's different than Bibee in this scenario.
I here's the thing. If Bibee's saying it, I'm going to go ahead and say the pitching staff has said this a few times without, you know, Vogt being an earshot. Like, it would be very human if anybody in that rotation or in the bullpen thinks to themselves, we can't get more than two or three hits in a game. This is no longer we're putting in the quality at bats. We're just not performing. Like, I would, again, I'm not trying to excuse it, but given how bad they've been playing, I think I'd be more concerned if the reaction to it was nobody turned their head and everybody just kind of watched him and then kind of went back to what they were doing.
I guess it would have been different if Bibee's, you know, if like I said, the Guardians are up and they struck out in the third inning or something and they just got no runs and then he lost his mind instead of it being directly after Bibee failed to do his job.
I do. I understand.
It feels like you're placing the blame in another spot to almost let you off the hook.
Now, I'm going to say this is a little deal today. I do think this stuff happens way more frequently than we realize. It's a clubhouse. Guys are not, you know, we say this about 53-man roster. The 26-man mm-hmm. roster, you have fights, you have disagreements. It's, you guys are trapped together for 6 months at a time, and you're not naturally all best friends. So with that being said, I do think if this is the we're going to lay down moment, I think it starts to paint some doubt on Vogt. And I don't know how far we go with that because I tend to think Steven's going to be back. But I do think the difference between this team laying down and dying from here and this team staying as buoyant as you possibly can and responding to this the right way, I do think that paints a picture of clubhouse health. And where people are with Vogt, where some of the players are. And I think that's a difference between how they enter the season and how you feel about Steven Vogt going into next year.
I mean, my big takeaway on this team this year has been just how up and down they are. I would bet they go on another streak, another run, kind of like they did a month ago, where they look like one of the best teams in the American League. Like, it's just how this team is.
So I think the difference between this streak and the previous streak is that the previous streak just happened so
early. This streak is worse.
Well, it's worse. It's also
in many
late.
Ways, it's worse.
It's like they're
losing 9 out of 10 is not losing 10 in a row, but this one feels worse, and this one feels like this is stamping down what your season is.
Well, and it's
right when you had a chance
And players are smart. They know. They know what this losing streak could mean for them. And it's really hard for Vogt or for that organization, for anybody, for the leaders in that locker room, even today with putting Santana on outright waivers, it's really, really hard to pull the nose up this late in season. That doesn't mean it's impossible, but when you're already a team that has performance issues on the lineup, and we can't get Kate Smith to not blow a save every week, mm-hmm. and Gavin's been bad the last two starts. Tanner's been bad since June. Slade Ciccone hadn't been himself. Logan Allen just is coming off a bad start. Like, the later this kind of play happens in the season, we can always fall back on, well, there's 31 games left to go in the season, and that's true. Yeah. But this is the wrong time to have a bad stretch. Worst time outside of like the last week of the season.
It's the perfect storm of suck right now. But that's what's been so interesting about this team is that they've had the perfect storm of everything clicking and then also the perfect storm of everything not clicking at multiple points throughout the year. It's just so odd how on the same side of everything it feels like they are at any given moment.
Tanner Bibee, Stephen Vogt, their big exchange last night. Big deal, little deal, or no deal. I think it's a little deal, but tonight and how they come out, it's not even just about winning. It's about how feisty, how competitive do you look? Because you've looked non-competitive for about 10, 11 games at this point. And in case you missed it, in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.